Welcome to this edition of Ecotones. I'm Joy LaClaire. According to news reports, Immigration and Customs Enforcement has greatly reduced their operations in the Minneapolis area. And while much of the focus has been on that location, what is the situation in Montana, and specifically here in Gallatin County? After reading a guest column written on behalf of the Community Rapid Response here in Bozeman and of a suit brought by four Gallatin County residents against the Gallatin County Commission and the Gallatin County Sheriff, we asked local concerned citizens and members of the Community Rapid Response, Ida Colleen and Julia Sheda, to help answer some of our questions. We spoke with them via Zoom on May 21st, 2026. Welcome to Ecotones, Ida Colleen and Julia Sheda. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
On Tuesday, May 26th at 9 a.m. at the Gallatin County Commissioners meeting, the public will have a chance to address the commissioners about people being held at the Gallatin County Detention Center for Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, awaiting transfer. Tell us about the situation. Ida, why don't we begin with you?
I'd just like to say that after the 2025 election, it was clear that mass deportation was going to be on the administration's agenda and that we would need community networking to respond. And so I reached out to Julia and several other folks in the community, and we actually formed a group of concerned citizens who actually value our immigrant neighbors, and we want to limit the harm that ICE policies are inflicting on our community. In the work that we do, one of the questions that we commonly get from people is, well, here in Gallatin County, there's not much ICE activity. There's not much immigration detention happening, is there? And the response that unfortunately we have to say is that absolutely there is. And what you mentioned, Joy, in terms of the county commissioner meeting that will be next week is a place where we can have a voice and talk about it. So basically here in Gallatin County, the most common path for ICE detention is through the process of ICE holds in our Gallatin County Detention Center. And in 2025, we actually had 84 individuals from our jail transferred directly to ICE custody. And that practice is ongoing. Earlier this week, I checked the jail roster, and there are five individuals on an ICE hold that are due to be transferred directly.
With whom did you check that?
The jail roster is what Ida's referring to. Anyone can go online and see who is in the jail right now.
And what their charges are.
Could you give the link for that, please?
I don't have that link in front of me, but anyone who does a Google search of Gallatin County jail roster or the Gallatin County Detention website, and then if you scroll down, you'll see inmate roster. And there's over 100 people detained in our facility here, but you can go down and see the charges that they're detained for. That's just public information.
Explore Big Sky reported on May 14th, 2026, that on April 28th, four Gallatin County residents filed a suit in Gallatin County District Court against the County Commission and Sheriff to stop a U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agreement with the county that the county operates under a federal program called 287G. Commissioners Jennifer Boyer and Zach Brown, as well as Sheriff Dan Springer, are named defendants. Now, Julia Sheda, you are one of the plaintiffs, along with Gallatin County residents Tegan Bauer, Aaron Levy, and Susan McGrath in that case. Would you please tell us what is 287G, and then share with us what led you to file this suit?
Great. Well, I hope I can do a good legal job explaining 287G. Basically, our local officials cannot, by Montana law, keep people in our jail under federal enforcement. There has to be a memorandum of agreement to, as it were, deputize someone at the jail to keep someone in the jail when they are only there for immigration enforcement, federal immigration enforcement. So one needs an agreement in order to legally do this. And our current agreement was signed in 2020 by then Sheriff Gutkin, and it was not approved of by our county commissioners at that time. So our suit is a simple one, and we are saying this is not a valid agreement because according to Montana law, county government must authorize any such agreement, and that would be our commissioners. So we consider it an invalid agreement. And to just step back from that, the important reason to get the county government to make a decision, approve or disapprove, is it gives the public an opportunity to weigh in, learn more about it. What does this mean? And we think it means a lot these days to allow ICE to come and take people. I would like to also add that ICE is taking people who have not had their day in court. They are often people about to be released on bail or even on their own recognizance, that the charges were considered so slight that, no, just go home and we'll take care of it later. But ICE is taking them. ICE very quickly sends people up to mostly the Cascade County Jail and then very quickly out of the state. These massive detention centers have really bad conditions. So it's a way of punitively pressuring people to self-deport. And so they're very quickly deported. It's a kind of gruesome system that is operating right now.
Julia, at what point of litigation is your suit? It was only April 28th that it got filed. Has there been a hearing or anything like that?
Again, I'm not great at the legal language, but we made a request that our county commissioners weigh in. And the judge has asked the county commissioners to show up in her courtroom on this Thursday, actually, Thursday, May 28th, to give cause why they have neither approved nor disapproved of this agreement.
So that's 2 days after the upcoming commissioner meeting, which is Tuesday, May 26th at 9 a.m.
Yes. And it's a coincidence. We had been planning to have the public show up and give testimony to the county commissioners on the Tuesday, the 26th. So it's really a coincidence. I'd like to add that the testimony for those who might consider coming to the county commission public meeting, it will be public comment. It's not an agenda item. The county commissioners will not have to respond, but this is just a way of letting them know, yeah, there's public concern that we're using our funds and our resources to enable these ICE practices.
I note that the former Gallatin County Sheriff, Brian Gutkin, who it seems independently without consultation by the rest of county government, entered into this 287 agreement with ICE. He has just recently been confirmed as the Montana U.S. Marshal. Is that your understanding as well?
Yes, I've heard that.
Is there anything you want to add to that? Any concerns?
I would just add that no current public representatives were there in 2020. It was a different county attorney, different sheriff, and it was all different commissioners. So we don't know whether anyone knew about it or what. We just have the written record.
Now, I've heard two different things about these 287 agreements, and I don't know if you can speak to them, but it's a source of confusion for me. On the one hand, I've read that once they're agreed to, unless action is taken to terminate them, they go on into perpetuity. But then I've also read that at least one county has, quote unquote, allowed it to expire. Can either of you speak to that?
My understanding is the same as yours, Joy, that these are signed and then there's typically no expiration date. And so that's why we need to proactively address it in Gallatin County if the citizens and if we decide we don't want it here. I have heard that in Flathead County that it was expiring and they were not planning on re-upping it, but that's hearsay. I have no specific information on why that's a different process.
Another aspect of our county government that is involved in this situation with immigration in the county is the disagreement that our county attorney, Audrey Cromwell, has been having with the Montana Attorney General, Austin Knutson. He wants her to hand over information, personal information, what they call confidential criminal justice information. information to Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And she says, I can't do that because it violates the Montana state constitution, I guess, right to privacy. And this has gone all the way to the Montana Supreme Court, who has ordered the Attorney General to respond to Gallatin County Attorney Audrey Cromwell, her assertions on this. And to thicken the plot a little more, the Attorney General, meanwhile, on April 30th, took over Gallatin County Attorney's office and quickly moved to try and stop her petition to the Supreme Court. Now, this is kind of head spinning to those of us who are just on the peripheries trying to understand this. Do you have any thoughts, either of you, on to what is going on and how this affects us here in Gallatin County?
I believe that what Audrey Cromwell is asking for is an opinion about the question of, it's not that no personal information would ever be turned over, it's that there needs to be a judicial warrant to turn that information over. And this goes back to that question of the separation between the federal immigration law is really civil law. It's a civil offense to be in this country without papers. And to ask there to be a judicial warrant, meaning there is cause, there's important cause that this person's information should be revealed. That's what really a judicial warrant is. And she's just asking for an opinion about that. So it's a question why he doesn't want to deliver an opinion. But there's a bit of a strong-arming situation here of wanting to pressure cities to accept the Trump administration's approach to mass deportations. So his actions are in line with that. There was pressure put on the Helena City Council to rescind some policies that they had passed and that there was tremendous public enthusiasm for that would have protected immigrants more. So this is part of that, which is kind of like denying local authority.
It got my hackles up to read that April 30th, the State Department of Justice took over the Gallatin County Attorney's Office. I'm sorry I don't have more information about that, but the article in the May 6th Daily Montanan headlined Supreme Court orders AG to respond to Cromwell's petition. It says that Knutson has until the end of the business day on May 14th to respond to the petition, which also touches on whether the Attorney General's office can assert supervisory control over Gallatin County. Meanwhile, it sounds like the office has control.
I don't know that either Ita or I can speak to what's happening in the Gallatin County Attorney's office right now. But yes, the Supreme Court did step in and did rule in Audrey Cromwell's favor to ask that Austin Knutson issue an opinion. And he still has not issued an opinion, but made an additional demand that Audrey's suit be dismissed. So it certainly is in turmoil. I think it might have disturbed some people. I will say, I think Audrey Cromwell has been pretty clear and pretty resolute. So she doesn't seem particularly shaken. And I don't know that it affects any business that's being conducted right now.
Now, there's been a case in Montana, I guess since January or so, about the Freud mechanic Roberto Orozco Ramirez. And Julia, you were talking about when people are in custody and handed over to ICE, they get taken all over the country. Are you familiar enough with this case to share with our listeners details about it?
I wish I were an expert in that case. I know more about what's been happening in Gallatin County, but I did read. So this is a longtime resident of Freud, Montana, who was detained by ICE. Local community members were shocked because he really was a valued member of the community. I don't know how far he was removed. Perhaps it was the Great Falls Jail. I am not sure. But the judge just this week ruled that he must be released and really chided ICE for not observing principles of due process.
Due process
includes allowing somebody to be represented by their lawyer. And so this practice of removing people far away disconnects them both from any family support they might receive, but also for their lawyers. He was not a person who had committed any offense in his local area, but he was just taken because he didn't have legal documentation for being here. But he'd been here a very long time, decades.
And I did hear that he spent time in Great Falls at the Cascade County Detention Center and then moved to Idaho, moved to an ICE facility in the Southwest, moved back to Idaho before he was moved back to Cascade County. And that pattern of rapid movement of people among detention center is common, and it greatly complicates their ability to access legal services because then they go into different case jurisdictions for their immigration case sometimes.
In a court filing, U.S. District Court for the District of Montana Chief Judge Brian Morris wrote in his opinion that Orozco Ramirez, an undocumented immigrant who had been detained since January, should be released from Cascade County Detention Center in Great Falls within 24 hours. Morris called the Trump administration's interpretation of the longstanding immigration law, quote, erroneous, end quote, and said people accused of entering the country illegally have a right to due process. Quote, such indifference from the executive branch to the Constitution's guarantee of freedom from arbitrary confinement represents grave cause for concern, he stated in the ruling.
Thank you so much for reading that quote. It's really quite eloquent. And the idea, the indifference to due process and constitutional rights is really the big point of all of this. If ICE were really proceeding in a judicious, treating prisoners with dignity, it would be one thing to debate immigration policy, but they are really behaving in a rogue fashion. And the treatment of prisoners is cruel. For me personally, this is something to stand against. This is not how our government should be conducting itself.
One more thing I want to mention to our listeners about the situation in Roosevelt County around the Roberto Orozco Ramirez case is not only was he treated poorly, but the sheriff had some issues as well. Sheriff Frederick, he noticed that Border Patrol, because it's near the Canadian border, and local people in the community, it's a very small community of Freud, had noticed that Border Patrol was kind of casing Orozco Ramirez's diesel shop. And they were growing concern. I'm quoting this article. Frederick felt tensions rise soon after January 24th when federal immigration officers killed Alex Pretty, an ICU nurse within the Department of Veterans Affairs in Minneapolis. The next day, a group of women stood by the side of the road in freezing temperatures near Orozco Ramirez's diesel shop, holding signs that read, "Stop bullying our community," and "America wants families like the Orozcos." Frederick's office started fielding calls from community members who were concerned that Orozco Ramirez might be detained or deported. Frederick said one of those callers told him something along of the community isn't going to let him go down easy. Frederick called the agency to understand what was going on. That's when a Border Patrol agent, according to Sheriff Frederick, said that the agency had a warrant for Orozco Ramirez's arrest and planned to deploy an out-of-state tactical team to get him to surrender to law enforcement. Frederick was stunned. If there's an outside TAC team coming here, it's usually because I ordered it, Frederick said. He added that in his years of experience, outside federal teams do not interfere with local sheriffs. They just don't. Not communicating with a local sheriff about a tactical team ahead of time, he said, would put his office in a terrible situation. His mind flashed to the worst case scenario. He thought of the women protesting by the side of the road and of the local residents, many of whom owned firearms, who said they'd stand by their neighbor. Frederick imagined receiving a 911 call for gunshots. What would happen, he wondered, if his deputies arrived at a shootout between federal agents and community members? Mostly, he wondered, why Border Patrol hadn't reached out to his office earlier. Quote, why not say, hey, how can we handle this peacefully without getting everybody in an uproar, he said. So not only is the situation a problem for the individuals and their family who are on the receiving end of ICE, but local law enforcement also has problems with this. Now, Ida, can you bring this to a local Gallatin County level of what's going on?
Well, thank you, Joya. And I think what you just mentioned is a perfect scenario that illustrates that while immigration enforcement is being sold to us as creating more community safety, the opposite is true. It's actually harming not just immigrants, but the entire community and law enforcement relationship with the community. In terms of where we are now, in Montana, probably the largest group of detainees are coming from the Montana Highway Patrol and the Customs Border Patrol in the form of traffic stops. And things as minor as a broken taillight. I know of one young man who was stopped because he didn't use his blinker for a sufficient time when exiting I-90. And something that would have been a warning, or he wouldn't have been stopped at all if it was you or myself, resulted in him being detained, sent to an ICE facility and transferred out of state and ultimately deported. And so that kind of thing is going on all the time on our highways in Montana. But in Gallatin County, with the 287G that we have at the detention center, individuals that are taken to the detention center for any reason, and many of them are just misdemeanors, maybe a first-time DUI or something, if they're detained in the detention center, and if they are foreign-born and they can't prove their U.S. citizenship, then they're routinely placed on an ICE hold. So when they're ready to be released, as Julia mentioned, then ICE has 48 hours to come and take them away, and oftentimes they're disappeared into the system. And sometimes that's after they've paid a bond or bail to be released, and they're deemed safe to be released, and they're taken into the ICE detention, and they often are difficult to track after that. And I know of one individual, a young man who's a recent graduate of Gallatin High and was working to support his family. He had a family and several children. He had graduated several years ago. He was arrested for a misdemeanor and fortunately had access to a lawyer. There was a concern that his civil rights had been violated in detaining him, and he was set to have a court hearing that afternoon. He was released that morning, and ICE immediately detained him. They were waiting for him. It was a coordinated release. And then they transferred him to another facility. He missed his court hearing for his civil rights plea, and he did not have a chance to assert his civil rights, as well as he missed his right to a trial for the misdemeanor charges. So right there, he lost his right to due process and to stay in court. He was eventually deported and now is unable to see his family, his children, or support them. So that's just one example that comes to our awareness. So much of this happens behind the scenes that we never become aware of, but that's one example that we do know of. And like Julia said, it's just sheer cruelty, and it's violating constitutional rights to not allow people due process.
Do you have a sense of how many ICE agents are operating in our area or Montana in general?
My understanding that is in Montana, we have had traditionally about 5 to 7 ICE agents in the state. We do, however, have a Customs and Border Patrol along the Canadian border, and Whitefish is one of their main offices, and they are able to operate within 100 miles of the border. And so detained people set up whatever they need to do.
I'd like to just emphasize what Ito is saying is happening on the highways with Montana Highway Patrol is that people are being pulled over for minor infractions based on whether they look Spanish speaking. So there is racial profiling happening on our highways right now.
And the famous Supreme Court Justice Kavanaugh gave a very short I guess it was a shadow docket thing saying, that's okay. You can do that.
In California. He said it's okay in California.
Only in California?
I believe it was a specific direction to the case in California.
But that's unfortunate.
Yes, it's unfortunate.
I just want to clarify for our listeners, these 287G agreements that exist in Montana include four different models. And you were just speaking, Julia, of a task force model, which enables officers to carry out immigration enforcement like arrests with ICE oversight during routine duties. Montana Highway Patrol entered this agreement in 2025. Then there's a tribal task force model, which functions similarly for tribal law enforcement. And then there's the jail enforcement model, which is what we're talking about here in Gallatin County, which allows officers to identify and process non-citizens arrested in their detention centers, and a warrant service officer program, which serves ICE-issued detainer warrants for individuals in their detention centers.
The warrant services officer is the model that we have in Gallatin County.
I would like to speak to maybe kind of the larger picture here, which is that in this country, there has been a story being told in the last 10 years, the last 20 years, for too many years, that basically it's a lot of rhetoric about immigrants being bad for the country. This story has been told by both political parties, and it's based on so many falsehoods. And I would really like people to start standing up, really speaking up for immigrants, which is actually what happened in Freud very beautifully. That whole community across partisan divide came together and said, no, no, this is a good man. This is a good family. This is part of our community. So just to say a few of these falsehoods for the listeners, one real falsehood is the idea that immigrants take more from us than they give. So they not only do essential work in agriculture, in the tourist industry, in construction, but they also pay taxes. And studies have been done that they really put more into the coffers than anything they take back. We're often told that they're receiving Social Security and Medicaid. You know, they've come into this country and now they're receiving Social Security and Medicaid. And that's just false. Ita was carefully explaining to me that the only immigrants who receive Social Security payments are those with green cards, those who have permanent residency here. And all other immigrants, certainly all new immigrants, they don't receive Social Security, and none receive federal Medicaid. There are a few states who have funds set aside to provide health services. You know, states that have a lot of immigrants in them have realized that, oh, it's really much better if people receive health care. That said, none of that is federal Medicaid money. So that's a real falsehood that gets promulgated. And then just this general sense that immigrants are criminals. And this is happening partly because there's a conflation of if you're undocumented, well, that's criminal. Even though documentation on immigration is civil law, it's in civil code. And that means it's like equivalent to getting a traffic ticket, to be in violation of important rules for how we conduct ourselves, but they don't rise to the level of criminal offense. So in my view, it is not true that all undocumented immigrants are illegal or certainly, and they're certainly not criminal.
In terms of the civil code, people being charged under civil code do not have the same rights as people being charged under criminal code. They are not read their Miranda rights. They don't have a right to that phone call when they're initially booked. They do not have a right to a lawyer. And so in many ways, that's resulting in harm in terms of people disappearing in the system, and they don't have that right for a phone call. And families are wondering, where did my loved one go? He didn't come home from work this week. He was pulled over. And we see this when we start working with the immigrant community. They are calling nonprofits asking, how can we find our loved ones? And they've actually disappeared. And because we know where to call, we call up the Cascade County Jail. And, oh, yeah, they've been detained there for several days, but there's been no right to a phone call. And that seriously impedes their ability to access legal support.
Just going back to this conflation of being undocumented with being criminal, We were told at the beginning of 2025, when the mass deportation started, that it was going to be the worst of the worst. And actually what has spiked is that people with absolutely no criminal record are being detained, as the gentleman in Freud, and people who there may be some kind of a criminal charge, but there's been no criminal conviction. And in 2025, the Cato Institute did put out a study that 73% of people detained had no criminal conviction. And only 5% of those who had criminal conviction, it was violent criminal conviction. That is very important to understand, that these master deportations are taking up people who really are law-abiding and peaceful and working to make a life here and contributing to our society. That actually, studies show that immigrant communities commit less crime. That, to me, is fascinating, that we are being told a story that immigrant communities are crime infested or are a danger to us in some way. It's just so false that actually there is less crime in immigrant communities. So that's just some of the things I wanted to get out there for our listeners to understand really how bad this rhetoric is. Personally, I feel so strongly that we are all immigrants, we who have come to this country. So unless we are a member of a tribe, we have immigrant heritage, and this country is built on immigrants. And it's very important to acknowledge that and to welcome people.
Ita, you and others wrote a guest column in the Bozeman Daily Chronicle in April that they headlined, "Community Members Ask for No ICE Holds in County Jail." And you and others were writing on behalf of the Community Rapid Response of Gallatin County. What can you share with us about the Community Rapid Response?
Thank you, Joyce. We are just a group of citizens that are concerned about immigration and limiting the harm. So again, after the election last year, we started networking, and we've pulled together a small group that meets maybe every couple of weeks, every month, and talks about what we can do locally to help protect our neighbors. And we've had several initiatives. One was organizing information sessions on La Migra Watch, how to safely record and observe ICE interactions. And we've also had a Fourth Amendment workplace campaign together with Bienvenidos. With this campaign, we've tried to educate business owners and been canvassing business owners to let them know about their Fourth Amendment rights against illegal search and seizure if federal agents come to their businesses. And most recently, we've engaged with Indivisible Bozeman on this No ICE Hold campaign. And we outlined the rationale for that in that op-ed. So that's something that we're trying to educate the community about, what's going on in our detention center, and hoping that people will contact their commissioner, either through the website or sending them an email, commission@gallatin.mp.gov. commission@gallatin.mp.gov is their email. And you can also access them through their Gallatin County Commission website. And as we mentioned earlier, we plan to attend the May 26th, 9 a.m. Commissioners meeting at the County Courthouse on Main Street to voice our opinion during the public comment session. And we really feel strongly about this, because this is not a symbolic gesture that we're demanding. We're not asking for a vote of support. We're asking them to stop a procedure in our local jail that is harming real people right now.
Do you have any events planned aside from the May 26th commissioners meeting? You were mentioning some information, instructional sorts of events. Are they ongoing?
We plan to continue spreading the word through our network of folks. And then we also have the court hearing on May 28th for the lawsuit. And we invite people to come and silently show their support for the No ICE Hold movement there.
And I would just add that for the ongoing work we're doing, if people would like to get involved, we do have an email address that people can write to. And let me say it slowly, crrgallatin at crrr@gmail.com.
And CRR stands for?
Community Rapid Response, crrgallatin@gmail.com.
And for folks who are interested in communicating with us, we can sign you up for it. We have an occasional email newsletter.
How about some final words? Ida, how about we start with you? Final words?
Thanks for the opportunity to come on your show and talk about this. And really what we do is we ask people to keep paying attention. The current immigration enforcement is really persecution by a group of powerful people who have thrown a lot of money into this. And so it's not going to end anytime soon. ICE activities will continue to evolve and change, and we need to continue to adapt to address where we see the harm. The widespread development of warehouses into detention centers nationwide is something for us to keep an eye out for Montana. And I think we all need to pay attention and be open to information beyond what we're hearing about in the mainstream media. American Immigration Council is a great resource and it has a good website that has a lot of articles on immigration to keep you updated on what's going on. There's many other sources available. And we do what we can, where we can.
We just heard from Ida Killeen. Julia Shada, any final words you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, I would like to end with just a few more facts about the harms being done. There are now 100,000 American children who have a parent detained by ICE. This is according to a Brookings Institute study. And since January 2025, 460,000 people have been booked into ICE custody. So this just points to how this creates intergenerational suffering. The loss of a parent is great harm. And I would like to speak to what Ita mentioned as well, the creation of these mass detention centers. These places are substandard. By many reports, they are substandard. They are inhumane. There is inadequate food and water, and there is currently no oversight. Even when congressional representatives show up, they are often blocked from entering. They have to go to court to get permission to enter, and it is in United States law that they should have oversight. All this behavior is just brutal, terribly violent. And I would like to end actually with a quote by writer Judith Butler. In my experience, the most powerful argument against violence has been grounded in the notion that when I do violence to another human being, I also do violence to myself because my life is bound up with this other life.
Well, that was Julia Shada. Thank you for joining us today. And Ida Killeen, the same. Thank you so much. And for the work you're doing in the community. We very much appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
You have just heard a conversation with two members of the Community Rapid Response Team, Julia Shada and Ida Killeen. Julia Shada is one of the plaintiffs, along with three other Gallatin County citizens, in a suit brought against the Gallatin County Commission and the Gallatin County Sheriff, a hearing on which will be held on Thursday, May 28, 2026, in Gallatin County District Court. On Tuesday, May 26, 2026, they are inviting people to join them during the public comment period of the Gallatin County Commission at the County Courthouse. The commissioners' meeting begins at 9 a.m. Echotones is a Beyond the Deep End production, hosted and produced by Joy LaClaire for broadcast and archiving on KGVM-FM and KGVM.org, Gallatin Valley Community Radio. KGVM is financially supported only by you, our listeners, and you can do your part to keep this social political experiment of, by, and for our community thriving by going to KGVM.org and click on the Gold Support KGVM button at the top of the page. We thank you for listening and for your support.